little something between you and me. Don't cost you nothing, this one's for free.
Now, I may have left too much white space here, but there are four things that I've come across, well, and three of which will I'm certainly familiar to you, although the context of how I'm asking you might mean that they don't necessarily come to your mind. The one's a specialised technique that unless you've come across it, you're not going to get. But the three more open ones. So what I'm looking for is a label that you can give to strings of words which are, you know, and this label is not question, but some other label.
I would have said an echo.
Yeah. Quite so. You know, could you give us a worked example?
When there's an emotion in what's been described, somebody uses a particular term, let me think of something. Can we think of... I didn't use any with Erica at all.
No, I didn't notice any.
Do you mean like repeating?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, repeat a key word in a consultation. Yeah, can you think of an example?
For the grumpy or
yeah,
no. I think Charlotte's got one.
Well, I don't know. All I tend to do is say something along the lines of, "Okay, so you've been having headaches for 2 weeks," and then leave it a little bit, and then. But I don't know if that's quite what you mean.
So that is an echo. I quite commonly just use the single word which is charged with emotion. So I've been very bad-tempered with my wife. Bad-tempered?
Yeah. You feed it back with the inquisitive tone, which very well demonstrated there, yeah? Mm. So that, and so a word or a short phrase.
Mm, yes.
So that's called echoing or sometimes repeating. I've seen it called repeating back, so I'll put both.
Yes.
And it's pretty open stuff, isn't it? So I'll put it up here. Repeating back. Okay.
I have one, but it might be further up slightly, like a statement of empathy.
Go on, and say, give us an example.
Something like... gosh, that sounds like you've had a really difficult time.
Yeah.
So it's not really a question.
No, it's not.
Somewhere
it's
between encouraging.
Yeah.
And well, it's
you know, yeah. No, it's a statement though, isn't it? That's it. If you and then you pause, and then the patient responds.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if I could colonise that suggestion and enlarge it, because I'd like to propose to you that basically any time we make statements as doctors, they're going to be responded to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, imagine, you know, patient A, your chest x-ray is normal. Oh, thank goodness for that, doctor. I was so worried it might be cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Patient B, your chest x-ray is normal. Oh, no, are we never going to get to the bottom of this? You get my point. Even something as prosaic as a factual statement will elicit a response.
Yes.
So I'm going to absolutely take your suggestion, Ira, and... You know, put it probably in this sort of territory. You're probably right because that's I probably got it the wrong way around. But and do you know I think I'd also like to suggest at least a couple of other types. So the most prosaic one's fact that these sort of empathic comment, shall I say? Utterance, whatever, empathic statement, I guess I should call it, so the one that you originally suggested. Simple observations will work. You know, you don't look like you're walking comfortably.
Yeah. You seem anxious.
Yeah.
Ah, very good. Yes, it's very good. Okay, thank you. So that's, so observations. That's very good. So that was in the Erica case. They're very good for picking up cues, yeah. And then the final one is a slightly specialised type of statement, which has anyone come across the label a "my friend John" statement? Does that mean anything to anyone?
Yes, when they're avoiding talking about themselves.
Yeah.
And they're saying like, "Oh, my friend has this or has this question."
Ah, okay, that's interesting. Yes, I see. So that's when the patient's bringing the subject up by pretending it's not them. Okay.
Oh, to take out more.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of like the mirror image of that. Because I thought you were going to give it. It is the same. It's a strategy that can work when the patient does appear to be avoiding something. You can, generally you can see they're anxious or concerned, And in some situations, you may have an extremely strong hunch about what that is. Let's say you've got a 45-year-old man with headaches, and he looks far more worried than he should be. There's about a 98% chance he's worried he's got a brain tumour, isn't there? And so, and you say, you know, are you worried about anything? No, I'm not really worried. I just want these headaches sorted out. But you're thinking, no, I don't believe you. You know, I put it to you that the defence case is a tissue of lies. And this technique would be, you might say something like, well, it's, you know, the reason why I ask is just that some of my patients with these symptoms, sometimes they're worried they've got something serious, even like a brain tumour. Well, I am a bit worried about that. Do you think it could be a brain tumour? Well, actually, it's extremely unlikely, but I promise you it's something I'm going to factor into my thinking. And I'll give you an opinion when I've, you know, finished. Oh, well, that's a relief, doctor. Yeah? So that's, and it's because I had a friend, John, once, and he was a bit like you, and he was worried he had a brain tumour. You don't really say that. The phrase is, some of my patients is the typical, or I sometimes find patients like you. And you, there are two versions of it. If you don't want to label, if you don't have a strong hunch about exactly what it is, then just saying some of my patients with these symptoms sometimes worry a bit is enough. If you do have a strong hunch, it can be even more powerful to say, or even something like a brain tumour, yeah? But that's that second level, you know, you'll know when you, and it, you know, sort of, the more cases you collect, the more often you've got, you develop it, I think. Is that a fair comment? Yeah. So they're sometimes known as my friend John's statements. Or one author calls it run up a flag and see if anyone salutes. So there's a whole toolkit of statements there. So thanks very much for that contribution. Now I probably, because I've not left early, because really I should shove all this down a bit, there's room for two here. One's highly specialised, really don't think you're going to know it, but there is just one more thing which I'm you know, you'd be totally familiar with the label, you just might not think about applying it here, but I'll just give you a few seconds to see if anyone's got something else in mind.
I've actually, from a different consultation, because we attend the IMG kind of consultation, which is arranged by the scheme. And there was one of the things that actually, we've been told something that I really kind of picked on and I thought I wanted to share with others.
Go please, yeah.
It was basically, like, any patient's agenda, like, part of the, you know, any patient's agenda is four questions. What is it? Why me? Why now? What's going to happen?
Yeah.
And I always tend to put those kind of questions at the back of my mind if I were in their shoes.
Yeah.
And I would be thinking that this is what would probably be going in their mind. But I don't know, sometimes I think it's different about how people would be able to kind of phrase it and, you know, knock on. So I'm not sure if part of those four questions is the missing one there.
No, I don't think so, but I think you're contributing. Well, I wouldn't, it's not quite what I had in mind. Yes. However, what you have suggested there has, well, what I wonder was, you could use those questions in a my friend John way.
Okay.
You could say, some patients wonder, why me?
Yes.
What do you think about that question?
Mm.
I think it's never occurred to me before, but that could be quite powerful, couldn't it?
And why now?
Yeah, or why me and why now? You could actually put two of them in.
Yes.
I think if you use the My Friend John technique, you could introduce them explicitly into your consultations in a profitable way. I mean, that's really intriguing. I can't remember, because there's Heron's six category analysis, isn't there? I don't know who the four is. I'm frustrated with myself for not knowing the theoretical basis of those questions, but very good. Well, I don't want to intrigue you too much, like this watching, you know, letting me ask you to think, but I think I'd like to recommend that we can use summaries or recaps to prompt patients. So this is slightly different. It is a good idea at the end of a history to recap the key points, check with the patient that they're happy. I'll use it to remind yourself that you haven't, that you've asked all the key questions, and say, right, okay, well, now we're moving on and I'll examine you. So using recaps and then a signpost to mark the transitions at the end of the examination, quick recap of the key, you know, any positive findings, any important negatives. Okay, so now sit back down, I'll tell you what I think is going on, and then I'll answer your questions and we'll make a bit of a plan. So you can use a sort of, that's kind of like a transitional recap. But recaps can be used during information gathering, especially if things are looking complicated or disorganised.
Mm-hmm.
So saying to a patient, hang on a minute, can I just put you on hold for a second? Can I check I'm keeping up with you? Are you saying A, B, C, D, and E? Yeah, I'll try, doc. Okay, on you go. And often using a recap in that way will allow the patient to move the narrative forward. Yeah. It is a potentially effective technique for moving things on, most commonly because it's a bit disorganised. But sometimes, if it's organised but very complicated, you will also need to do it. But if a patient knows you've understood a portion of the narrative, they can then confidently move it forward. So for so-called disorganised historians, this is the most powerful technique. You may need to use this several times. You know, serial summarisation is the most, plus really good open directed questions, so you don't accidentally send, if they're a bit rambly, you don't want to send them off on a tangent. So good open directed questions followed by serial summarisation is the most powerful mechanism for patients who are struggling to tell a coherent narrative. So I would put sort of summary recap. You know, we're talking about sort of bullet-pointed summaries here. Can be used with the intention of advancing the narrative. It's a potential tool for information gathering. The final one, the big blank bit of paper, I've left it far too big, is a specialised little technique. Now, so a quick show, I want to quick... Keith, have you seen me do this
before? No, I haven't.
Oh, right, okay, that's good. Well, you're showing good attention there. Could you just put your hand up if you've ever watched even a short fragment of an episode of Columbo, the American detective series?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Yes. Three. Never.
Really,
well, you're very young, Jonathan. It's allowed. I don't know the others missed it. Actually, it's a 1970s two. In fact, the last feature-length film was filmed well after the year 2000. So he's an American detective, and you've surely seen the image, you know, cigar, raincoat.
I think I know who
you know the character.
Mold, yes.
Yeah. So the deal with Columbo, all right, is that we get to see the crime, often right at the beginning, although not always, but anyway, pretty early in the episode. And so we know it's always a murder, so we know what happened. So these are not whodunits. The question in an episode of Columbo is, will Columbo solve the case? So they obviously only make his difficult cases into TV shows. So it's always a little bit in doubt. And his particular way of going about things is to look a little bit bumbling and confused, which lulls the perpetrators into a false sense of security. And then he will say, won't he, right at the end, he'll have maybe the perpetrator, you know, the people we've met in the episode, including the villain, will be in a room, and he'll apologise for not solving the case, and he'll just be on his way out, and then he'll come back in, and he'll go, sir, just one more little thing, just to clear up a little detail here from my report, and then we can all go home, sir. You say you were in Los Angeles on the day of the murder, and we have this witness statement. Please use your car in San Francisco. I don't know if you can just...
That's a really good impression.
It's not bad, is it? Yeah, I've studied hard, all right? I've watched almost every episode. 13 TV series and a whole length of feature films. I am a big fan. The thing is, this has been written up as the Columbo technique, as a method for interviewing patients. And what Columbo does so well, you see, is to take a mismatch between the physical evidence, some piece of concrete evidence anyway, and the assertion of the guilty party, and in a very non-judgmental way, just, you know, it's probably just me, I'm just a bit puzzled, help me out here, hands the dilemma over to the and this is so it works a bit, it could work a bit like this. Actually, it was written up for this technique. It was written up for as Columbo technique for intravenous drug users, but it works any time there's a mismatch. Okay, so I'm just I wonder, can you just clear one thing up for me, because I'm just a bit off the pace of this. I just want to check. You've not been injecting for the last 3 months, yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank God for that.
Can we just have a look? You are playing a face. Whatever the trick is, you don't need to bring it in here. Can we just have a look at these urine samples? I don't know.
Yeah, my urine samples,
yeah. Yeah, I'm just a bit puzzled. This one looks positive.
I don't They're not mine.
Somebody swapped it, someone else.
Yeah. Someone else. It's interesting, isn't it? So it is the you know, and it works with, you've been eating nothing but lettuce leaves, let's have a look at the weight record, or you've taken all your tablets religiously, come out, yeah, okay, good, yeah, let's just, come on, just have a look at the repeat prescription screen. And the key is the long pregnant pause, all right? No hint of accusation in your voice, just a tone of puzzlement, and then let it run. It usually takes 8 or 10 seconds of silence for the perpetrator to own up on a Columbo. All right? And so here's what's great. You can now watch an episode of Columbo. Seriously, you can claim an hour's CPD for your next appraisal. All right? Studying the Columbo technique. And for those who are still registrars, just get it on your e-portfolio, all right?
Perfect. Let's hear it for our GP. Skills improving, risk removing, no confusion.